The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking on a concept that has, well, haunted philosophers, baffled scientists, and ultimately built the very foundations of modern mathematics. We're talking about infinity.
This is arguably the most mind-bending topic we've ever covered.
Yeah.
And our map for this journey is Ian Stewart's incredible book, Infinity, a very short introduction.
It's such a great guide.
It is. And the book's core insight really is that infinity isn't this single vague idea of endlessness. It's actually a precise, quantifiable, and dynamic mathematical concept.
And that distinction is so crucial, isn't it? Because when we think of infinity, our finite human intuition just throws up its hands.
Exactly. You see paradoxes, things that are impossibly large.
But Stewart shows us that while our intuition fails, formal logic gives us the exact tools we need to reason about the infinite perfectly.
All right. So the mission here is to demystify it for you. We want to show how this concept is, well, absolutely foundational. It touches everything from set theory to black holes and even computer algorithms.
And the central conflict that Stewart tackles throughout the book is this historical difficulty we've had in accepting infinity as an actual completed thing.
Right.
Rather than just an endless potential process.
Yeah. So to guide us through this intellectual abyss, we need a seasoned professional.
Yeah.
And Ian Stewart is definitely that.
He really is the ideal guide. Stewart is an emeritus professor of mathematics at the University of Warwick. He's also one of the most prolific and popular science writers of our time. I mean, he's written over 140 books.
Wow.
He got his doctorate from Cambridge. He's a respected fellow of the Royal Society. His credentials and fields from chaos theory to cosmology are just, you know, impeccable.
But what really makes him the perfect voice for this deep dive isn't just his technical depth. It's his ability to tell a story.
He doesn't just present the math. He recounts this centuries-long philosophical struggle, the moments of breakthrough, the crises of logic that led to our modern understanding.
Absolutely. He turns what could be just dry formalism into this compelling history. And he uses these relatable analogies like Hilbert's Hotel to bypass our natural confusion and make the complex accessible.
So let's look at the book's central thesis. Stewart essentially argues that the history of infinity is this intellectual journey,
right,
defined by three movements, moving from fear through caution, and finally into revolution.
That's the chronological and conceptual arc perfectly. Stewart traces how infinity went from being this completely taboo, forbidden notion in ancient philosophy to a pluralistic foundational tool in modern math.
So the first movement, the fear, it starts with the ancient Greeks. They were deeply uncomfortable with the idea of actual infinity. So what was it about Zeno's paradoxes that created such an intellectual roadblock for 2,000 years?
Well, Zeno of Villia really established the core conflict. His most famous example is Achilles and the tortoise. Zeno argues Achilles can never catch the tortoise because, you know, to reach the tortoise's previous position, Achilles must first cover half the distance, then half of the remaining distance, and so on.
So you create this infinite series of ever smaller tasks that have to be completed.
Exactly.
But the simple common sense rebuttal is, well, I see him catch the tortoise every time. So how did the Greeks reconcile that observable reality with the seemingly impossible math?
Their philosophical solution, which Aristotle formalized, was to just refuse the premise of the problem. They completely rejected actual infinity, the idea of infinity as a completed object, like the set of all those points Achilles passes. Instead, they favored potential infinity as a process that could continue forever, like, you know, potentially dividing a line segment in half endlessly.
And that caution kept actual infinity out of serious mathematics for 20 centuries.
An incredible amount of time.
It's just amazing. Two millennia of intellectual self-censorship. So the next big movement, the caution, came with the invention of calculus by Newton and Leibniz. They used infinity, but they didn't really embrace the actual infinite, did they?
No, they found a brilliant practical sidestep. They needed tools to calculate things like the instantaneous rate of change or the area under a curve. And they did this using infinitesimals.
Infinitesimals. So quantities that are smaller than any positive number, but not quite zero.
Precisely. This allowed them to treat curves as if they were made of an infinite number of tiny straight segments.
And calculus became the engine of the scientific revolution. It let us predict orbits, calculate forces, you know, build modern engineering. But Stewart points out the logical foundations were pretty shaky at first. How can a system so successful be built on questionable logic?
It was a monumental success, built on a practical sleight of hand. Newton and Leibniz treated infinitesimals as a convenient fiction.
A convenient fiction, I like that.
They used them in their calculations, treating them as non-zero, but then, and this is the crucial part, they just set them to zero at the end of the calculation to get the final answer.
So they were using infinity as scaffolding for a process, like finding a limit, but still avoided treating it as a concrete, countable object.
Exactly. They sidestepped the deep philosophical question.
And then enter the hero of the book, Georg Cantor. He starts the Cantorian revolution by daring to treat infinite sets as completed entities. And his initial tool was just shockingly simple, one-to-one correspondence.
And this is where the mind-bending really begins. Cantor realized that to compare the sizes of two sets, you don't need a final count. You just need to try pairing the elements.
Okay.
If every element in set A has a unique partner in set B, and vice versa, then they have to be the same size, even if they're infinite.
And the famous result of this is that the set of natural numbers, you know, 1, 2, 3, and so on, is the same size as the set of even numbers, 2, 4, 6, which is profoundly counterintuitive because the set of natural numbers clearly contains all the even numbers plus all the odd ones.
It completely breaks our finite intuition. But you can create a perfect pairing. 1 goes to 2, 2 goes to 4, 3 goes to 6, and on forever. They never run out of partners.
So this size of infinity, the infinity of countable things, what did Cantor call it?
He designated it as Alephnot, or EO. And Stewart illustrates this beautifully with the analogy of Hilbert's hotel.
Ah, yes, the infinitely long hotel that is always full.
Always full. But if a new guest arrives, you still have room. You just ask the guest in room 1 to move to room 2, room 2 to room 3, and so on, freeing up the first room.
And even crazier, you can accommodate an infinite busload of new guests.
You can, by asking every existing guest to move to the room number that is double their current one. So room 1 goes to 2, 2 goes to 4, 3 to 6. And that leaves all the infinite odd-numbered rooms empty for the new arrivals.
That's the bizarre yet totally logical nature of Alephnot.
It is.
But wait, so he proved there are infinite sets that are the same size. But then he went even further and discovered that some infinite sets are actually bigger than others. That's the real shocker for me. How could he possibly prove that?
This is the absolute peak of the revolution. He did it with something called the diagonal argument.
Okay.
Cantor proved that the set of real numbers, that's the continuum, which includes all the numbers with infinite non-repeating decimals like pi and the square root of 2, is strictly larger than the integers, than euros.
Can you give us just a high-level sense of how he did that?
Sure. The proof is ingenious, and it's a proof by contradiction. Imagine you tried to make a list of all the real numbers between 0 and 1. An infinite list, paired up 1-to-1 with the integers.
So you're assuming you can list them all.
Exactly. Now, Cantor said, look at your infinite list. Take the first digit of the first number, the second digit of the second number, the third of the third, and so on. You create a diagonal sequence of digits.
I see. Down the diagonal.
Right. Now, just construct a new number by changing every single digit in that diagonal sequence. So, for example, if a digit was 5, you make your new digit a 6.
And this new number, it's guaranteed not to be on your list.
It can't be, because it's different from the first number in the first decimal place, different from the second number in the second decimal place, and so on forever. Your list is incomplete.
So you can never create that one-to-one correspondence.
Never. The infinity of the real numbers, which we call UR, is fundamentally, provably larger than the countable infinity on. And this revealed a whole hierarchy.
A hierarchy of infinities. Stewart introduces the concept of transfinite numbers and showing there are infinitely many different sizes of infinity. I mean, it just completely redefines the word quantity.
And this revolutionary work, as often happens in math, it led to a crisis. When Cantor started treating infinity like a real object, the system sort of bit back.
Right. We're talking about Russell's paradox, which revealed some pretty fundamental flaws in this naive set theory. What was that paradox again?
The famous one is the set of all sets that do not contain themselves. If you try to ask whether this ultimate set should contain itself, you run into a logical black hole.
How so?
Well, if it contains itself, it violates its own defining rule, which says it must not contain itself. But if it doesn't contain itself, then it must be included by its own definition.
It's a complete logical contradiction.
Total contradiction. And this forced mathematicians to abandon common sense ideas and build robust axiomatic systems, basically creating strict rules for which sets could even exist.
The complexity didn't end there, though. We also get the humbling work of Kurt Gödel.
Right. Gödel's incompleteness theorems showed that even with these new rigorous rules, the dream of a complete, consistent foundation for all of mathematics was just impossible.
He proved that in any sufficiently powerful logical system, there will always be true statements that you can't prove or disprove within that system.
Exactly. Infinity, even when it was tamed, showed the inherent limitations of formal human logic.
So the math broke, which forced new rules. But does infinity ever appear cleanly, you know, outside of abstract counting and set theory? Does it exist in the structure of reality itself?
It does, not just in counting, but in the structure of complex geometry. Stewart highlights the role of fractals. These are shapes with self-similarity at all scales, which really embody the infinite.
Like the famous Koch snowflake.
Precisely. You start with a triangle, and on every edge, you add another smaller triangle, and you repeat this process infinitely.
Okay.
The result is a shape that has a finite measurable area, yet, because you're constantly adding more and more detail to its perimeter, it has an infinitely long boundary.
That's a beautiful way to connect the abstract idea back to the physical world. Infinite complexity in a finite space.
Mm-hmm.
So having covered this massive intellectual journey, let's pull back. What are, say, the three enduring takeaways that Stewart really wants us to grasp?
Well, the first, and I think maybe the most important, is the triumph of abstraction over intuition. Our common sense is tethered to the finite world, and it just fails when it faces infinity.
Right.
But formal logic, the rigor of mathematics, gives us tools, like the rules governing Hilbert's hotel, that let us reason accurately about concepts we can never truly visualize.
That's empowering. It means we can understand things our brains weren't initially built to process.
Right.
What's the second core takeaway?
The plurality of infinities. The paradigm shift was realizing that infinity isn't monolithic. It's a hierarchy of different, provably distinct sizes, zero and beyond. Counting forever doesn't even get you to the biggest infinity.
And the third theme seems to be about the nature of intellectual progress itself, that failure is often a prerequisite for progress.
Absolutely. Stewart emphasizes that paradox is a catalyst. Those crises, Zeno's paradoxes, Russell's paradox, they weren't failures. They exposed weak points in the mathematical structure, which forced brilliant minds to create deeper, more robust systems.
Which led directly to things like calculus and axiomatic set theory.
Exactly. It's a powerful lesson in problem solving. Sometimes you have to break the common sense assumptions to find the true, non-intuitive solution.
You know, to provide some concrete touchstones, let's highlight a few of Stewart's most memorable ideas that sort of summarize the whole book.
There's one great one that captures that essential shift. It's something like, the crucial step in taming infinity was to stop thinking of it as a process of endless counting and to start treating it as a thing, a completed set.
That just perfectly summarizes Cantor's break from 2,000 years of tradition.
It does. And then there's one that captures the shock of his discovery.
Go on.
Cantor's proof that the infinity of the real numbers is strictly larger than the infinity of the integers was a thunderbolt. It revealed that infinity was not a single concept, but a name for a whole new universe of different sizes.
It really must have felt like discovering a new dimension.
I think so.
And finally, there's a thought that highlights the boundary between mathematical truth and physical constraint.
Right. Stewart notes that. And infinity in an equation for the physical world is often seen not as a description of reality, but as a warning sign that the theory itself has broken down.
That's fascinating. So in math, infinity can be true and real, but in physics, when a black hole singularity gives you an infinite density, it just means your theory, general relativity, stops working at that point.
Exactly. The map fails at the singularity.
So for you, the listener, how does studying abstract set theory help you today? Let's maybe wrap up by framing the practical value of grappling with Euler and Hoyne.
Well, the foundations are everywhere. First, the foundations of modern technology. I mean, calculus is still the indispensable backbone of engineering, finance, most economic models.
Sure.
And those fractal principles are essential for compression algorithms, realistic computer graphics, and for modeling the chaos you see in natural systems, like weather patterns or the branching of trees.
So every time you zoom in on a digital map, you're using principles rooted in infinity. But I think maybe the most enduring value is in abstract problem solving.
Yes. Following Cantor's complex, non-intuitive arguments, the same way you follow the strange logic of Hilbert's hotel, It trains your mind to handle robust, counterintuitive reasoning.
That ability to follow logic past the point where common sense screams impossible is just an immensely transferable skill.
In any complex field, from programming to law.
Yeah. You know, what surprised me most in this deep dive wasn't just that there are different sizes of infinity, but the profound human courage it took to propose that idea. Cantor faced intense ridicule from his peers just for suggesting we could count past infinity. That audacity changed everything.
It's a profound realization, and it leads right to the final conclusion of Stewart's work. The story of infinity is really the ultimate testament to the human mind's capacity to grapple with concepts far, far beyond its immediate finite experience. It proves that intellectual rigor and courage can fundamentally reshape our understanding of what reality itself even means.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.